So there was a young preacher who was fresh in his new appointment, and at this appointment, one of their traditions was to have a children's time at the altar, a children's sermon every week. And this young man had never been around children and was not very good with kids. And so he really was kind of, nervous about how it would go. So he really kind of overthought his children's sermon. And he decided he needed to do something that would engage the kids and get them involved with what he was saying. So he decided he was going to ask like a series of questions to sort of break the ice and get them participating. And so he starts off and he says, boys and girls, do you know what animal it is that is gray and it runs up and down trees? You see it in your backyard, you see them in parks. What, you know what that is? And they all kind of looked at him like mystery in their eyes. And he says, oh, come on, you know what it is. You know, it has a big bushy tail. It takes nuts and puts it in his. Come on, what is it, kids? And finally, one little boy raises his hand and he says, well, I know that the answer is supposed to be Jesus, but it sure sounds like a squirrel to me. Now, I will tell you something. I almost never do this, but, you know, that is a old worn-out preacher's joke. I'm sure y'all have all heard 100 times and are just being polite. But you know, I couldn't think of another way, a better way to start off than that as we move into what's going to be a sermon series for a number of weeks here. And that is because within our church life, we have church answers. And one of our church answers for everything is Jesus, right? Whatever the question, Jesus is the answer. We even have a song that John Bunn could play for us. Not right now, but he could. But Jesus is the answer for the world today. And on a very big scale, that's the truth. We do believe Jesus is the answer. But it's a lot more nuanced than that. And as we look and read, particularly the gospel, we can't help but notice that asking questions was central to Jesus' life and teaching. We may think of Jesus as the Bible answer man, but in reality, if you observe Jesus, he really asked questions. He asked a lot more questions than he did giving answers. In fact, sometimes, you know, we just a couple of weeks ago did the parable of the Good Samaritan where, you know, a person would ask him a question and he would answer it with a question, right? Remember that? He'll say the young lawyer came and said, how does one inherit eternal life? And he said, well, how do you read the law? What's written there? Jesus, that was Jesus' style because he knew that we engage when we have questions. And the questions that Jesus asks say a lot about Jesus, but how we answer those questions says a lot about us. Just a few facts that I found out. If you look down, there's about 307 questions in the Gospels that Jesus asked. 307 questions. Now, this sermon series is not going to be 307 weeks long. We're not going to do every one of them. But we're going to look at some of the big ones. And one of the critical ones that, you know, kind of demand an answer from us. That at some point we are going to have to say, are we going to answer Jesus' question? How are we going to live that out? He, in turn, is asked 183 questions that people ask him, and he usually turns it around and asks another question. But he only directly answers, he was directly asked 183, he only directly answers three. In fact, for every question he answers, he asks literally 100. And so what we want to do is we enter this series is to look at some of these questions and consider as Christian individuals and also maybe as a church family, how do we answer this? How would we answer these questions? And so we're going to start, and you probably already read your bulletin, you're good about that. And see, we're going to start with this passage in Luke. Now, I only put one question up. There's really three questions here. And so let's look at all three of them. He asked them back to back. They are all with the same, kind of the same subject and all, but they're all three very important, because if you look at it, Jesus is talking about the personal, he's talking about the ethical, and he's also talking about finances. He's also talking about, you know, what we do with our stuff, you know. And so here's the part from Luke 6. He says, if you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good to those who are good to you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners do that. And if you lend to those whom you expect repayment, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners expecting to be repaid in full. And so he comes down to his point. But love your enemies. Do good to them and lend to them without expecting to get anything back. And this is the word of God for we, the people of God. Love those who love you. What credit is that to you? Even sinners love those who love them. This man in the nursing home was 100 years old. And so the newspaper sent a reporter over to talk to him. And he said, tell me about your life. What do you consider your greatest achievement? And this old man looked at him and said, my greatest achievement, I feel, is that I have no enemies. And he said, wow, that is wonderful. What a wonderful life. You have no enemies. And he said, yes, I've outlived them all. That cannot be our strategy for dealing with our enemies. And so Jesus gets to a point, and he says, you know, our standard as followers of Jesus Christ, our standard as Christian people has to be above the world's standards. It's not unusual that you love and forgive those, you know, who you like, those people close to, you know, the world does that. Sinners do that. That's not a high standard that, you know, you do good to those people or you lend to those people. But what's going to change the world? What's going to make people take notice is that you love your enemies. Love your enemies. And, you know, it's such a difficult thing to do. Because we're afraid if we love our enemies, if we let down our guard, we're going to get hurt bad. You know, maybe they've already hurt us and we're going to get hurt even more. We're going to be mortally wounded loving our enemies. And so, you know, how do we deal with that? And we have all sorts of excuses and all sorts of ways to sort of, you know, circumvent, you know, what the gospel says here. But what I want to talk about is this standard that that are going to be known by our love. If the world is going to take notice of us, it will be through our acts of love. It will be by our demonstrating love to this world in turn. I fear sometimes that it's not that, that we are known by what we're against and what we hate. You know, we in the church, we hate a lot of stuff, and we'll boycott things just like that. You know, you make a decision we don't like, you know, we're not eating your hamburgers or buying your soap, you know. And so the world gets to know us as those sort of reactionary, and we don't love people because of a certain ethnicity, or we don't love them because of a certain sexuality, or we don't love. And so we get known by the things that we don't know, and it becomes so cloudy that people can't see this message that we have. And yes, surely we are called to be in this world, but not of it. But when we're in this world, if we're going to change this world, we do it through love and through building bridges, even when we're having stones thrown at us like the little guy was, even when we get knocked upside the head. We got to keep working on building that bridge. So why should we do that? Why would Jesus say this impossible thing? Because Jesus is giving us a mission to change the world, to make this world like the kingdom in heaven on earth, to make disciples of all humankind so that it would be like that, so that people would see that love. And he knows that you cannot overcome, hate with more hate. You can only do that with love. I think it was Abraham Lincoln. Somebody can help me with that. He said, the way that you get rid of all your enemies is you turn them into friends. And that's a hard thing. And Jesus, Jesus gives us. So why should we do it? I'm going to give you five reasons why we should be working on this. That this, should be the foremost of what the world knows us about and what we try to transform our own hearts and lives into doing. I'm going to give you five reasons why we should love our enemies. And they all kind of lead in one to another. They kind of build on each other. And the first one, it kind of starts, maybe you may think shallow, but not really. If you love your enemies, you're going to be happier. You will be happier. I think of times in my life when, I've been nursing my wounds and being resentful, and that leads to kind of hatefulness, and it hates to lay in it, wake at night, and, all the things that come with it. It's a kind of a human nature. But, it doesn't do anything except make me resentful. It does not change anything, But when we learn to love, when we are able to release the hatred and the resentment, the forgiveness, then suddenly we're freed from that. And, when we're happier, the people that are around us will see a difference. Sometimes our unhappiness, our anger, our unforgiveness, our resentment, who it affects is not the person that we're really kind of thinking about, who that enemy might be, or that person that we're unreconciled might be, but it's the people that are closest to us. That's our spouses, it's our brothers, it's our sisters, it's our children. Those are the people that get affected. And so we'll be happier, we'll be a better person if we do that. The second thing I would say is you could change the person's life. There's no guarantees, and that's why it's so risky. The little guy stacking the stones trying to get back over there, trying to build that bridge, I love it that it kind of ends with him extending his hand. But yet, if we're not putting the effort, if we're not building towards that, we are not going to see a change in the world, and we'll never see a change in that person's life. But if people see a change in us, they are going to be much more open and much more likely to have their own lives change. If all they see is hatefulness and resentment and, trying to even the score and get back, that will never change them. That will only drive them more into their corner. But when we are able to respond with love and graciousness, we have a chance of changing a life, and we might even make a friend. You can make a friend. How many of you, I bet you everyone in here, at some time in your life, there's been a person that you have come across that you have just said, I don't like them. Ever done that? I don't like them, you know. I remember one of the closest friends that I had at seminary. We were in a small class together, and we went in the first day, and she was sitting, you know, on the other side of the room from me, and we started a discussion. She started talking, and I thought to myself, I can't stand her. You know, just like everything that I was, she was the other off. And but, you know, as I got to know her, and even though we were very, very different and saw things very, very differently, I found a great, loving friend who has been there with me through thick and thin. And I dare say that that's happened to you too. We have a great group of pastors that meet together for breakfast every Wednesday morning. And in that group, we have just about every theological perspective representative and just about every political perspective. You know, we're very different, but it's a very, I've learned so much from people that are very different from me. And they become very good friends. You know, friends that I would stand up for in any circumstances, even though we might be different. Even though, you know, in some circles we might be even considered opposites or our enemies, they become great friends. The other thing, you know, as I say, these build on each other. Is that, but you set an example for others. You set example for others, especially our children. As we look at impressionable kids, they know, they see our kids, our grandkids. Other family members. On just about a weekly, certainly a monthly basis, I have some of you that will come to me and talk to me about your family members that you're concerned about because they don't know the Lord and aren't walking with the Lord, and you're concerned about them. And so I know that you're trying to do all you can, and all of y'all are wonderful and that. But sometimes some people from other churches. You know, it's like they want me to give them the magic track. They want me to give them the magic book or the magic Bible verse to say that's going to make this suddenly become, you know, the person's going to suddenly turn their lives around and come to Jesus Christ. All that with just this one thing. They're looking for that secret coin that's going to change it. And it's not that easy. What's going to change them is seeing consistent, loving life lived out in you every day. And when you mess up and you blow a fuse, you know, it takes about 100 times of not doing that. And it's hard and it's unreasonable, but you want to change your family's life, your children's life. That's how it does. They see love in you. They see forgiveness in you. They see you dropping resentment and not holding on to things. They don't see you settling scores. They see in you a diversity of friendships and a diversity of ways in which you interact with others. And that is what will be the example for them that will change them. And then, you know, it's better for society. It's better for the world. As I say, you know, we're never going to change the world with more hate. The world's got enough hate and enough division already. We'll only do it with love. We'll only do it with love. And so it comes down to these questions, you know, these questions that Jesus asked. And if you stop to think about it, you know, the most important decisions you've ever made in your life probably have to do with your response to some question, right? When somebody's come to you and ask you a question, or maybe you've been in a certain place to receive a certain question, maybe you stood at an altar and heard somebody say, you know, will you take this woman to be your wife? Or, you know, you sat across the desk and someone said, will you take this job? Or you're sitting on the side of the road and you roll down your window and the officer says, sir, do you know why I had you pull over? It's a question. But the most important questions are these questions that come from Jesus. Will you follow me? And if you love those who love you, What credit is that for you? We have to love differently. They have to see us love as Christ loves, for they will know we are Christians by our love. Let us pray. Oh God, we...